The man stood up, moving jerkily, as though he had been sitting for a long time. "I hope he isn't too hard on you," he murmured, as he led the children toward the empty fourth wall. "But I've been reprocessed once, and that was more than enough. And I don't want to get sent to it. I've never been sent to it, and I can't risk having that happen." There was it again. What was this it? The man took from his pocket a folder filled with papers of every color. He shuffled through them carefully, finally withdrawing one. "I've had several reports to make lately. I shall have to ask for a requisition for more A-21 cards." He took the card and put it against the wall. It slid through the marble, as though it were being sucked in, and disappeared. "You may be detained for a few days," the man said, "but I'm sure they won't be too hard on you because of your youth. Just relax and don't fight, and it will all be much easier for you." He went back to his seat, leaving the children standing and staring at the blank wall. And suddenly, the wall was no longer there. They were looking into an enormous room lined with machines. They were not unlike the great computing machines Meg had seen in her science books, and that she knew her father sometimes worked with. Some did not seem to be in use, and others' lights were flickering on and off. In one machine, a long tape was being eaten. In another, a series of dot dashes were being punched. Several white-robed attendants were moving about, tending the machines. If they saw the children, they gave no sign. Calvin muttered something. "What?" Meg asked him. "There is nothing to fear except fear itself," Calvin said. "I'm quoting, like Mrs. Who. Meg, I'm scared stiff." "So am I." Meg held his hand more tightly. "Come on." They stepped into the room with the machines. In spite of the enormous width of the room, it was even longer than it was wide. Perspective made the long rows of machines seem almost to meet. The children walked down the center of the room, keeping as far from the machines as possible. "Though I don't suppose they're radioactive or anything," Charles Wallace said, "or that they're going to reach out and grab us and chew us up." After they had walked for what seemed like miles, they could see that the enormous room did have an end, and that at the end there was something. Charles Wallace said suddenly, and his voice held panic, "Don't let go my hands. Hold me tight. He's trying to get at me." "Who?" Meg squeaked. "I don't know, but he's trying to get in at me. I can feel him." "Let's go back." Calvin started to pull away. "No," Charles Wallace said. "I have to go on. We have to make decisions, and we can't make them if they're based on fear." His voice sounded old and strange and remote. Meg, clasping his small hand tightly, could feel it sweating in hers. As they approached the end of the room, their steps slowed. Before them was a platform. On the platform was a chair, and on the chair was a man. What was there about him that seemed to contain all the coldness and darkness they had felt as they plunged through the black thing on their way to this planet? "I have been waiting for you, my dears," the man said. His voice was kind and gentle, not at all the cold and frightening voice Meg had expected. It took her a moment to realize that, though the voice came from the man, he had not opened his mouth or moved his lips at all, that no real words had been spoken to fall upon her ears, that he had somehow communicated directly into their brains. "But how does it happen that there are three of you?" the man asked. Charles Wallace spoke with harsh boldness, but Meg could feel him trembling. "Oh, Calvin just came along for the ride." "Oh, he did, did he?"